Perry.
We're doing interviews involving the presidents of the Cobb County branch of the NAACP, and we'll go ahead with our questions. So, Mr. Perry, if you could you just tell us about a little about where you grew up and, you know, just like an early history?
Okay, sure. Well, I was born in Southwest Georgia, Blakely, Georgia, 1957, July 31st. But I moved and grew up in some parts down in Southwest Georgia. But I finished school at Decatur High School, growing up around in the Central DeKalb area in 1975. And after completing high school, I immediately went to the military and stayed 3 years. And after I got out of the military, I started going to DeKalb Community College and going to school there, graduated, got my associate in administration of justice. And I think that's about 1978, 79. And I went on, got a master's in public and urban administration, as well as to law school as well. So from Atlanta Law School in 1984. So I've been in this area for quite a while. I moved to, I was living in Southeast Atlanta from 79 to 82. And I got married in 82, and in 85, my wife decided she wanted to move from Southeast Atlanta to really Cherokee County.
Mm-hmm.
And we
you were in grad school or in law school?
I was she moved, and I got married in 82, I was in grad school then.
Okay.
But we bought the house in 85, and I was going to law school then.
Okay.
And in Cherokee County in Woodstock.
Okay.
And moving up to Woodstock, that's when I became involved with the Cobb NAACP.
What year was that?
Probably, I would say, initially 1986, 87. And I was still, because I was in law school, I was doing legal redress for them, which meant that all the complaints came through. I got a chance to handle them and go out and talk to people about issues involving education, employment, housing, whatever was going on. I kind of handled it. And I was the time they put me on the board, and I served on the board and eventually served vice president under Jerry Dodd for probably 4 or 5 years. And eventually was elected the president of the Cobb in the NAACP. And I think that was in 94.
what year were you elected to the board? Was it?
I was in the board. I probably joined the board probably around 87, 88.
When you initially joined there in the 80s, were you involved with any of the student drives here on campus trying to get membership for the Cobb County branch?
Well, you know what, not actually with the students, but the students had a chapter here, so they served up under us, and whenever they wanted to do something, we would always assist them with it or whatever. So yeah, we were kind of involved, but not directly involved, because we wanted them to be their chapter, to be the student chapter here. In fact, I remember I think one guy was the student president, named Ken, so I can't remember Ken's last name. But he was our president of the student chapter of the NAACP here. And oddly enough, I got got complaints from Kennesaw State University that I had to come up and investigate. And as a result, we formed the president's advisory council, which was an offshoot to help deal with the complaints that were coming from the faculty and staff and students from Kennesaw State University.
Is that during Jerry Dodd's presidency? Yeah,
during Jerry Dodd's presidency, exactly.
What kind of complaints were you guys getting?
Kennesaw's nursing program was it's tough. And so we had several, I remember these distinctly, about a couple of nursing students didn't think that they were being treated fairly by some of the faculty, about some of the grades, and how they just didn't think that they were being treated fairly. Some of the students were concerned about some of the activities here. They didn't think they were ethnic enough, or they were inclusive enough. So we were addressing some of those things as well. Those kind of things. How to recruit and retain students as well as faculty, because we had a lot of faculty who would come here and they would immediately leave. So we want to talk about how could you retain them and why weren't they staying? You know, so it seems like a great place to work, but when they get up here, they're gone. And it's because they just didn't feel the air, the environment wasn't as warm and welcoming as it should be.
Right. Okay. And being the legal advisor for the Cobb County, you were involved in all of that?
All of that, yes.
Well, backing up a little bit to where you went to Decatur High School, you said you graduated in 75.
Yes.
So I guess you started 71?
Going to go to high school? Yeah.
Were you involved with any like organizations while you were in high school or in your youth or anything that would have led to your joining the NAACP or anything like that?
Well, you know what? I wasn't really involved in any organizations. Mm-hmm. Always admired it and wanted to do it, but I just kind of naturally gravitated towards that. You know, I've always been civic minded, but you know, back then, I guess in high school, I was working. I always worked when I was in school as well, so that kind of took up a lot of my time as well. But then, attending, doing the games and all this stuff, but never really, I would say, actively involved in civic affairs at that point in time.
Was there an African American majority in Decatur High School?
You know what? It was about. It wasn't a majority, okay. But that year I think was like '75 is when we first got our first black homecoming queen. Year we graduated. And I was her escort, so I never know that. Yes, we were real good friends. Diane Porter was her name.
Never forget it. Well, since you said you've been civic minded like all through high school and stuff, is that what like your inclinations in law school? Did you want to do more civil work with your degree than
exactly? Yeah. I want to work and help people and. You know, because that's the really, there was a quote by a guy who worked for he was in NAACP as well, working for Thurgood Marshall, and his name was just escaped me, but I'll think of it a little bit later. But he says, when you become a lawyer, you either have to be a social engineer or you become a parasite to society.
Right.
So yeah. I didn't want to be a parasite, I wanted to be a social engineer. So his name is, I almost called it. Okay, I can't call it, I'll think of it in a minute. But anyway, when I read that quote, it just moved me so.
Yeah.
So you went to the military immediately after high school?
Immediately after high school. In fact, I graduated high school June 6th and joined the military June 22nd. I wasn't even fucking 17 years old. My mother had to sign so I could get in.
What branch?
Army.
Oh, <right. laughs>
And joined on a, just, thinking, what am I going to do after high school? And it just so happened that I was reading our school newspaper, the Scribbler, and saw an ad that says, join the Army, see the world.
Oh.
And I went up at lunchtime and talked to a recruiter.
It wasn't something you had thought about prior to that?
Had never thought about it. You know, wasn't even aware, just that Vietnam was just ending, in May '75. Okay. They weren't even thinking about anything like that. I was just had no clue.
It was a big shock to your mom when you told her?
No, I mean, she wasn't really shocked. She was just like, because my older brother had been in the military and been to Vietnam.
Yeah.
But I guess, once she knew that the Vietnam conflict was going to end in May, she didn't think too much about it. And plus, I was a really good student. I graduated like the top 10-15% of my class. I could have went directly into college, but I wasn't feeling college then.
Uh-huh.
And it was funny, all the people who, when I told them I was going to the military, who said he was going to college, when I was getting out, they were going to the military. Like, I'm on my way out of here. And, and some of them still have not got any degrees.
Oh.
Uh-huh. And I've got three. Yeah, exactly.
How did your mom feel about your brother serving in Vietnam?
Oh, it was some apprehension there. But, of course, with him joining the military, that was okay. But when he got sent to Vietnam, it was kind of a stressful time. But he made it in, made it out okay. I guess it's okay if you can call it be okay being in a war situation. Yeah.
Did you feel, not to jump back to civic-minded duration in law school, but when you were in law school and you were particularly focusing on, social issues and things like that, did like foreign policy or anything of that play into nature, your experience with your brother being in Vietnam and how you felt about what we were doing in foreign countries or anything like that?
More
at home?
Yeah, more at home. More at home. I was thinking about all the mostly the domestic side of things.
Were you sent anywhere in the Army, or did you stay in
that? Yeah, no, I went to, I did some training in South Carolina, then went to Fort Sill, Oklahoma for a year, and I was in charge of sending enlisted men overseas when I was in Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
Then I went overseas to Korea, and I was in charge of getting officers to come to Korea. Okay. And so I worked on the general staff, and then the next 6 months I came back and worked at the company in Augusta and got out.
Mm-hmm. So you lived in Augusta?
For about 6 months. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So when you first, you said you initially joined the NAACP branch here in Cobb County in 86?
Yeah, I think it was about 86, 87, along that time frame.
I mean, he wasn't president anymore, but Oscar Freeman was still around.
He was still around.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall any particular events that he coordinated?
Jerry had just become president when I actually come on. And I remember, not really seeing events at Oscar, like Freedom Fund events that they had taken place, but I remember them talking about him negotiating the some economic program that they had signed on with Cobb County, mm-hmm. And it was a fair share agreement that Oscar was the primary architect behind that.
What did the fair share?
It was talking about making sure that getting blacks involved in hiring positions and making sure they rose through the ranks in Cobb County.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was with the Cobb County government.
Wow. Was he actively involved in the NAACP actions after
1980? I'm going to say he was active, but this is the thing that a lot of times when you've been president and you're no longer president, you kind of step back a little because people always look at you and you overshadow the president. So you got to be careful how you do that. Mm-hmm. You got to let them put their stamp on it and let them do what they want to do. So he was active, but not as active as he had been because he would have overshadowed Jerry's presidency had he actually stayed on, because he was the face of the organization for that time.
Uh-huh. Where were you guys meeting? Were you still meeting in Zion when you had originally joined, or?
We used to have our general membership meetings there at Zion Baptist Church, and we would have, sometimes we'd have our board meetings there as well,
right.
And we would meet at the office there on Marietta Street, Roswell Street rather, for just the office or whatever, but for maybe a committee meeting.
Right.
But the board meetings and the general membership meetings were held at Zion.
Do you recall when they moved from Zion to, where's the current location?
Well, now they have enough room over there. Then we would always talk about going to different churches and different venues, because we didn't want, some people don't like going to churches.
Right.
Some people had a problem with Zion Baptist Church. So we felt that we had to do, we went to the VFW. Mm-hmm. Over there, because we were trying to go places where we go to the library. We always want, because we got to have our eyes and ears open to the community as well. Okay. Whatever reason people had, I don't want to go to Zion. So we would say, okay, well we'll meet here and we'll meet other places. And that's one of the things we struggled with, but we finally implemented to try to make sure that everybody would feel welcome.
Do you remember some of the reasons?
For me?
Some of the reasons they didn't want to go to Mount
Sinai. Well, some people just don't like church.
Oh.
Some people, and they thought, it was there were personality conflicts, that you had to deal with. Mm-hmm. You'd say, okay, well, in order to deal with this, then we'll go someplace else. Because Reverend Marcus had a nice church there with Turner Chapel. Okay. And you can see now, Turner Chapel, this big church, Zion had to go. So, there were those kind of personalities that you had to deal with. So you wanted to make sure that, we don't have to be at Zion all the time. And that's what we were telling them, because we wanted everybody to feel that the NAACP represented them. Uh-huh. And when a pastor would say, I want you to come to our church, sure, we'll come there. Host us. Uh-huh. Let us come. Because that would mean that now we would get a different group, a different audience, a chance to get new members, new blood, new ideas. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
So how long were you guys moving around like this, the church, library, mm-hmm. and then before you established, a real...
Well, I think they still probably go around some.
Yeah.
To different venues, because again, that generates new blood, it gets new people. Some people who might be over at Pleasant Grove, mm-hmm. they might never have heard of the NAACP until certain times, but if you say we're going to have the NAACP is going to meet here, those members will come out and they will support the organization there. So, we just kind of do it, move around and make sure that all areas are coming. Plus, it was the Cobb County NAACP, that's Marietta. We wanted to go to Austell, Mapleton, every municipality. We wanted them to say, look, host us. Let us come out there.
Early on, in 86, while you guys were traveling around, mm-hmm. Memberships were, since it was the infancy of the Cobb branch, mm-hmm. were memberships, a major way to accumulate funds for
the definitely membership has always been a way to accumulate funds. And then we would have the NAACP Freedom Fund, which is our major fundraiser. Mm-hmm. And then we would do other little things as well, you know, to try to, you know, do things throughout the year to augment those memberships and the time between the Freedom Fund.
How was membership in those days?
We stay steady right at 500 members all the time. Okay. 500-600 members are just about all the time. You know, and then we want people to get life membership. So we always wanted people, you know, membership's always been right around 600 members during that entire time.
All right. Were people interchanging with people coming in and coming out?
Exactly. Okay. People moving, because somebody moved here new to Cobb County. You know, we transfer their membership if they never got involved in NAACP before. It was an opportunity for them to get a new membership, and they would leave. Other people would come in, so we were always in transition. Wherever you the thing was, we used to always, and the membership chair would always say that wherever you go, you want to make sure you got some membership applications with you.
Okay.
You know, don't pass up an opportunity because you always meet people. Uh-huh. So.
Did you guys do a lot during the 88 elections mm-hmm. with the Cobb County branch? And, I mean, did you correlate with even the student body here mm-hmm. during the presidential election?
Well, you know, the NAACP always have to maintain, we would have voter registration drives. Mm-hmm. We couldn't advance one party or another because we have to keep our 501c3 affiliation. Mm-hmm. So we were very careful to make people know that we were not advocating. We were doing voter education. You know, now, you know, we would say, you know, this is how the candidates stack up on these issues, and we put it out there to them. Now, you make up your own mind, you know. But, you know, we cannot endorse one candidate over another at all. We've always been nonpartisan.
Did it work well being nonpartisan while you're trying to accumulate membership?
Sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, but because people, all of the ideas, we want to empower the community.
Right.
We want to give you information so you can make an informed choice. We could always tell you what to do, but that would only last for a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if you had enough information and you could make your own decision, then you could say, look, I did it, voted this way because of these issues. And we would always do report cards, mm-hmm. you know, say, look, here's the report cards, here's how they come out on certain bills, here's how they come up on certain issues. You decide which one that you want to do. Mm-hmm. Come election time, you need a poll or ride to the poll, we're going to be here. We always had offices open when they're doing the elections to get members back and from the polls. We would have little snacks from whatever, you know, just to always do that. Always have voter registration drives. At any point in time that you walk in that office, you can get registered to vote right there.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit about your election?
As president?
Yes.
Well, it was funny. When I first was elected, nobody wanted to be president. You know, it is because, it goes through cycles. And nobody wanted to be president. We were like looking around, and somebody had asked me, said, well, look, you know, I didn't even live in Cobb County. I lived in Cherokee County. So I really felt, you know, like, and that was one of the things I struggled with, like, okay, are they going to really accept me as being the president? Because I didn't live there. People, you know, a lot of people knew that I didn't. And oddly enough, you know, because there wasn't any opposition, because everybody knew that, mm-hmm. they could tell that who the actual workers were. And you know, people thought I brought a certain position to the branch they had never had before. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Jerry didn't have a college education. Oscar did not have a college education. So here I was coming in, you know, college educated, college trained lawyer. Mm-hmm. You know, they were looking for something like that. Yeah.
Did Jerry Dodd, was he running again?
Against me? No. In fact, he had asked me, he said, if you want to run, you want to be president, you know, I won't run. You know, and I thought about it for a long time, you know, and then, you know, but no, Jerry was godfather to my daughter, so we were very close.
Oh.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Do you remember how many, about the size of the Cobb County branch during your election or even when you originally joined?
Well, now, like I said, we had always stayed about 500 members. How we announced the voting and we had the elections, there was no opposition for the presidency. We might have had the biggest opposition was probably with the board, because the board was limited to the number of people could be on. I can't remember that number right now, but you know, some people want to make sure that they were on the board or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, got that, but that was no opposition at all to my being the president at that time.
Do the members vote? And
Yeah, members can vote, and if you got to, and any member who's been a member for I think 30 days prior to the election, you're eligible to vote in that for the president.
Okay.
Or any other elections we might have.
What was your platform when you were running?
Well, I just wanted to continue some of the things we were doing, but you know, I want to step it up a little bit. You know, we always had a thing of making sure that all phone calls got returned within 24 hours.
Okay.
I wanted to make sure that, you know, people knew that the office was there for them. I wanted to make sure that try to get a person there volunteer to man the office 5 days a week, 8 hours a day.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to have it more open, more accessible. And you know, I spruced the office up, made it more, you know, inviting, more airy. You know, my wife went in, she was an interior designer, she did some stuff in the office, uh-huh. And made people walk in there like, ah, you know, just simple stuff. We want to make sure that people come there and we were able to make them feel that when they left out of there, they actually had a voice. We had actually heard from them. But you know, it was just a transition because, like I said, I was already involved. So I was doing that to help Jerry. So when I took over, I just kind of like kept some of those things going. I wanted to make sure that the youth chapter was very active and more involved. I wanted to work with the boys' club, the girls' club, other organizations, so that we weren't having events during the same time. Let's coordinate our calendars together, mm-hmm. so that, you know, we won't have anything this Friday, you have something this Saturday, because you know that's just wear people out when you have so many organizations that's just trying to tax the same people the same amount of time. So I want to make sure that we have our calendars together and we were working together. But that was the only thing. My whole thing was that I established an advisory board consisting of, you know, people in high places. You know, I remember I had like Dave Hankerson, those people on it. You know, giving me some advice which brought more credibility to the organization. You know, so that's one of the things that I want to do, just raise the profile of the organization a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Work with existing organizations that were already there and make it, the organization more responsive to the community.
I see. Did you work collaboratively with Atlanta or any other brand?
Well, you know what, now, certainly if somebody called and they lived in Atlanta,
uh-huh.
and they would call us, I would tell them, you know, to call Atlanta, and then I would probably follow up with the people in Atlanta. Or if it was in Rome or wherever, we'd always do that. But we with a certain Cobb County, we only worked with them within Cobb County.
Okay.
If the person worked in Cobb, their problem in Cobb, I would deal with it. But I didn't want to go stepping on other territorial thing, look, because I wouldn't get very much credibility if I go to Atlanta.
Okay.
I'm the Cobb County NAACP. So what? We don't have to listen to you. But when in Cobb, you know, we can flex our muscle a little bit more.
Okay. Uh-huh. Hmm.
While you were president, did you maintain still your legal advising?
No. Well, you know what? No, I brought in another legal redress person.
Did you?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So they were the legal redress at that point in time, and I would just supervise all the other committee chairs. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did too. I kind of broke it down so that, you know, the first vice, we had three vice presidents, mm-hmm. and I gave them certain areas of responsibility. So, but you know, having been a legal redress chair, I knew a lot about it, and they still would defer to me on some of the things,
right.
as well. So it still worked out well.
Was that something new, having multiple vice presidents?
We had three, but the area of responsibility and the roles were never truly defined,
right.
how I did them. You know, because I wanted them to do something. You know, we did a newsletter, and we got the newsletter out religiously on a quarterly basis. You know, and that was the one way that we tried to make sure we stayed in contact, and all members got it, and had an opportunity to, you know, participate by submitting articles or doing whatever.
So you brought a whole new level of organization.
I tried to. I mean, I don't know if you saw my book, but you know, when I turned it in, Dr. Scott was like, "This is great," because I had an agenda, minutes, everything, and I kept it in a notebook. So whenever they come there, they just flip through it.
Yeah, all the minutes from the archives were very thorough.
Yeah, that's what I made a point to do it, because we were kind of loose leaf, but you know, that's what I wanted to do, to bring that kind of organization to it.
Mm-hmm. When did you decide to do the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial signs?
Well, you know what? At the time, I was president of the Cobb County Martin Luther King support group as well.
Okay.
And I was president of that, and I was also Bosselus, which is the president of my fraternity within Cobb County as well. So, so it was a, I was, I had it all drawn, like, you know, board meeting for NAACP was, you know, my week. I just had them lined up, you know, I had to be real organized. Uh-huh. We had been petitioning, this was Cobb County Martin Luther King Jr. support group. We were petitioning the Marietta City Council to do a street in honor of Dr. King. Because I'm like, wherever you travel in the country, it's there.
Yeah.
Why can't we do it? And they were, their thing was, well, you know, this one Atlanta. Yeah, but this is Marietta, neighbor next door. So we were submitting petitions, submitting resolutions. I went to the city hall a couple of times and presented resolutions. And I wanted that. And my preference, I wanted Lawrence Street. Mm-hmm. Because I thought Lawrence Street was representing what Dr. King. You had the businesses there. You had the residents there. And Lawrence Street went from right through the poor neighborhood all the way to uptown.
Oh, okay.
You know, I didn't want to be something like Roosevelt Circle, which they would gladly say, here, take this. But I said, no way, I don't want that. I want it to be, because King crossed all those lines. And so, you know, and we kept going, and they finally said, well, you know what, we won't. They give me all kind of reasons. It's too costly. It's this, it's that. Businesses don't want to change their stationery. They say it's going to be costly. But it was so odd and ironic. About the same time, we got a new area code, 770.
Oh.
Nobody said nothing when they said, you got to change it. And I even told them, the post office, they even agreed. They said, we'll deliver the mail for 6 months, even if they use Lawrence Street instead of MLK Drive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, had done all the homework. But I said, you know what, but nobody said anything. So they finally said, look, we'll do a Memorial Highway on our South Marietta Parkway. And I said, okay, just give me something. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In your time as a president, did you have to go to any national conventions?
Oh yeah, we have state meetings,
okay.
We have regional meetings, and we have the national conventions. So yeah, we that's the whole point. You got to go and represent the chapter there.
Okay.
You know, so we, you know, state meets in like October, the regions are in April, and the nationals in July. Yeah.
Does the state or the on the national level, do they dictate what the state and local levels do as far as...
They do set, it's like the, if I can maybe understand, if it's like the U.S. Constitution.
Right.
You know, they'll say, you can do this, but you know, but and this is the absolute floor. Now, you can have some more stuff in between here, but it can't conflict with this. And they would tell us, we want you to do a mandated program, do this program here. And we'll say, no, and we'll do it. They won't tell you how to do it. They'll just say, do a program. You can be as creative as you want to be, mm-hmm. with it, you know. And they'll say, we want to do it within a certain time frame, like February or whatever, because we want everybody to be on the same page. So that's how the direction would come from them, you know, as to how they want things done. And the same with the, but normally it would come from the, and the region would do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the state might say the same thing. We're going to hold this kind of drive. Or we're doing this. We want everybody to do it. You know, so you know, you come up with your ideas, but whatever works best in your community, because you got to think what works in Cobb might not work down in Washington County,
right.
Or Richmond County. Yeah.
When you seeing the other organizations on, like the other, like you said, Richmond County and stuff like that, when you see them at the national level, mm-hmm. do you find that the Cobb County branch is more organized than a lot of the other ones, especially the level organization that you brought to the branch?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, because whenever we did it, you know, you get awards by how well you submit your reports and everything else. So, and that's what I was striving for. I wanted to, when they start calling out names for organizations, for programs and things you have done, and you can verify and take pictures, I want to make sure that we were called, our name was called. And our name was always called, you know, by doing that. And that's what I wanted to happen.
Now, does that help with the other regions? Like, they can take what you guys have done and apply it to their group?
Sure. I mean, that's what you're doing there. You know, you're hearing things that are going on. Well, I did this. I did that, and you can take back what might work in your community. You can, you know, leave some of it aside, or you can modify it. And that's the whole purpose of going to workshops, state workshops, regional meetings, and the national meetings, to get that kind of involvement or get energized. You know, it's just, it works well that way. You know,
did the national, organization ever issue any mandates to Cobb County in particular? Or?
Not really mandates. No, we never really got mandates for anything. You know, when Mr. Penn, I remember Mr. Penn getting involved when we had the dispute about the election. You know, he said, he would say, look, this is how I want you all to do this and do that. And we would follow that, you know, what it said. And he might come out and say, the Constitution is clear. This is how it has to be done. And you'll do it this way.
And that dispute occurred at the end of your term.
Right, uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, at the end of my term, everybody wanted to be president.
Yeah.
Because we had done such a good job that, you know, I think whenever you went to Cobb County, people were saying, you know, oh, the NAACP. Right. You know, that we were the name to call if you needed something. Okay. And people like that. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody wants to be a part of something when it's doing something. When it's dead and when it's going down. No, I don't want that.
Did your membership go up?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Increased membership. Increase life memberships, increase organizations buying memberships into it. You know, our whole thing was we want to come and sit around the table with everybody. Okay. You know, we didn't have enough resources to go in and making demands. And I knew that, you know, through conciliation, you can get a lot more done than going in demanding things a lot of times. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and I would use that legal training in the background to be a reconciliator, as opposed to we're gonna make demands here.
Uh-huh. Were you in support of Ms. Bonner when she was running?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I've always known Deanne for a long time, and I support her. In fact, now I'll drop in, and she'll say do this and do that for me, write a letter for me, do this for me, make calls for me. I jump right on it. Yeah.
You can see why she's been president for so long.
I can see. I think it's back. Yeah, I can see. I'm gonna leave it at that.
Can you talk a little bit about the '97 election?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, that point in time, like I said, there were several people, you know, who wanted to run and whatever, and I was still running as well. I think they it was myself, Dwight Graves, and was a third person. Maybe Randolph Scott.
Yeah.
Uh huh. Yeah, and you know, so everybody was out there, you know, they were campaigning, and I just, you know, campaigning on what I had done, you know, but, you know, they bring their members in to vote, and I thought it was great, you know, that the organization had generated that kind of level of interest that two or three people wanted to be president of the organization, because like I said, 3 years ago, nobody wanted to be, and then even after that. Nobody wanted to be, and that's something Deanne just said, you know, she's been, you know, she stepped into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know, nobody wanted that responsibility.
What was the dispute?
What was the dispute?
Yeah.
Well, because as best I can remember, I think Dwight Graves was saying that he had won the election, and there were some something about the people who were voting. They were bringing people in, and the memberships weren't in within a certain amount of time. You know, and that's the thing. You got to be a membership within. It has to be in to the secretary and to the treasurer, your money in, mm-hmm. within 30 days. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, you just can't vote. So they were, you know, and I tried to, you know, just stay out of it because I didn't want to be a lightning rod behind it. I didn't want to, you know, to be a distraction. I wanted us to come back on a united front. Because I knew that, you know, it was critical for us still to show that we were united in some area, as opposed to a fraction here and a fraction there, whatever. You know, people were looking for that, and I didn't want to get involved in it. I had a business to run. I had other things going on in my life, you know, kids, family, yeah, everything. Yeah, it wasn't that big of a deal to me. And I, like I said, I was only persuaded to run after no one else wanted to run. You know. So that was the thing.
Do you think the dispute hurt the NAACP branch?
Short term, it did.
Short term,
it did. Uh-huh. Yeah, because people didn't know. Nobody likes to see contention and want to be involved in it. Now, some people they'll love to see contention and stand out and whatever, but they don't want to see contention and say, I'm going to jump in here and be a part of this. Yeah, they want to wash away and see how it goes. So short term, it did.
Uh-huh. After Ms. Bonner became president, was what you said short-term disruption, were that was it split kind of like people that had supported her mm-hmm. versus people that had supported
mm-hmm. well that's what I'm saying. It was certain people, like, you know, people who supported Dwight Graves, they whatever, but those people, they only came to support a person, whereas, you know, you should go to support the organization. It's just like, I don't know if this is like, it's like this in white churches, but some people, if a pastor leaves, they leave. That's not, you know, you're here for the church, not necessarily for anything else. So that was my whole thing. And I think the people who were going to be around, like who had supported me, some of my, even the officers who were there with me, they stayed on to make the transition and served in Ms. Bonner's first couple of administrations. So, you know, she stayed on. And like I said, those people, like Dwight and whatever, I don't think they ever, and it's funny because Dwight lives across the street from Deanne Bonner, mm-hmm. you know, but I don't think that they ever had, you know, they wanted to go and start the SCLC and do the other thing. They just wanted it for their own personal, I guess, bully pit or whatever they needed for. I didn't need it for that. Mm-hmm. I didn't need it for that at all.
How much longer after 97 did you remain active in the branch?
Oh, I'm still active.
Are you?
Yeah, like I said, but I stop by, do things, do whatever DM needs to be done. That's it. Mm-hmm.
You guys still have membership drives?
Membership is a continuous operation. Yeah.
Would you say you're still sitting around 500 or much more by now?
I would think it's more by now because, again, you know, where I had done the board with the community leaders and whatever, Deanne's done a good job with that. She's got Lee Rimes from over at, you know, Lockheed, Georgia over there. You know, Lockheed, Georgia, when you get Lee Rimes to chair stuff, he's got, you know, that's pretty good. You know, so she's done a real good job of galvanizing people in important places within the Cobb County community who, you know, when you can send out a letter and say these people serve in an advisory capacity, and you're looking for this presidents of the Bank of America, you know, Lee Rimes and mm-hmm. Chamber, that looks really, really good. Yeah. So I really think that she did a great job with that.
Is the student NAACP body still active here on campus? Do you know?
You know what? I don't know. It should be, but I'm not quite sure. Because again, you know, you've got to have an advisor and people who are mm-hmm. willing to, you know, carry it on.
I saw even back in during your presidency, Ms. Bonner was advocating here on campus for mm-hmm. you know, a larger black faculty, mm-hmm. a larger black student body.
Right.
At what point do you guys think you really achieved what you were going for as far as?
Well, you know what? I still look at the numbers sometimes, and I look at, you know, like I said, with Dr. Pabst and his administration, how he's got, you know, a lot of diversity and minority representation there. And a lot of times, you know, that's not the key. You can have them there, but are they sensitive to the issues?
Right.
You know, whatever. And that's the thing, you know. But I think I know with Arlethea Perry Johnson, she is, and she knows. You know, you can call her. You can, and that's the president of vice president for external affairs. She does a good job of that. So, but you know, the campus was so much smaller then. You know, I think, you know, like Melvis Atkinson, she was the chair for minority affairs and trying to teach math. She's wearing so many hats. And you know, some people just can't multitask. Mm-hmm. But now, see, that's what her job is, solely to external affairs, mm-hmm. dealing with the community and other things. So when you have that kind of person to say, look, this is my job, this is all I do, and if I don't do this, it's going to reflect on the president, it tends to get done more, whereas Melvis teaching classes, doing this,
right.
it was a hard job.
Was Kennesaw enthusiastic about the project? Or your
Dr. Siegel was always enthusiastic about it. She always wanted to make sure that, you know, but that the students had the representation, that she had this diversity. She was concerned about faculty come in, faculty leaving. Oh, but she has to say, you know, she's the president, but you got vice presidents and you got deans, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to bring up one story and, you know, she's going to rely upon them to do their job. Mm-hmm. A lot of times she wouldn't even get wind of things, you know.
In your term as president, did you ever meet up with any resistance in the community with the NAACP?
Any
resistance from the community? Maybe.
No, well, you know, you would meet people that always say, you know, well, I don't know what you all are doing, whatever, you know, and I would say, well, you know, it's kind of hard for you to not know what we're doing because things change from inside out, not outside in. Mm-hmm. You know, at that point in time, I could run off a list of things right quick, and they would go like, what? But yeah, you know. And a lot of times people don't realize they are aware of the need or the existence of NAACP branch or chapter until they need it. Uh-huh. My kid's in jail. My kid just got suspended from school. I'm getting ready to put out my house. Or, you know, people tell me, call the NAACP. Oh, I didn't know that y'all were here. Some people say, well, I haven't been living that long. How long have you been here? 10 years? Okay, so you have never heard about a Freedom Fund banquet? You've never, you know. I asked him, so did you join the NAACP back where you come from? No? Yeah. Okay.
Are there any particular incidents you recall of that nature that you had to deal with while you were president or as a legal advisor on the board?
You know, there were a lot that I dealt with, you know, like kids getting, you know, suspended from school. I remember particularly, you know, this one situation where these, in Cobb County schools, this guy had, it was a fight between students. Mm-hmm. And the teacher was handling it. And they had in detention or whatever, and the guy was talking, the African-American child was talking to the advisor about it, and he was saying, what the white guy, he said, that nigga's doing this, and the advisor said, he's not a nigger, he's a white boy. And I was like, oh my goodness. So and I was telling him, like, you know, you can't be. Yeah, but you know, that was one just for the books. I'm like, okay, right. They tell them, you know, niggas come in all shades, all colors, okay? But yeah, but you know, we had stuff like that all the time, you know, with parents coming in, with their students who had been suspended for some reason, and we found that, you know, a lot of times the African-American kids and blacks were being suspended at a higher rate and an incident than the white kids, where, you know, teachers would look at the white kids and say, you know, oh, they're just being boys. But if black kids did it, you know, oh, I feel intimidated here, you know. I got to get out of here or whatever, you know. So, yeah, we had all those cases all the time.
What was the membership base while you're presidency? Were they young? Were they old?
Oh, cross-section. You know, we had some people like Mother Solomon, who was 99 years old. Oh, wow. From Zion Baptist Church, Walter, you know, whatever. And, you know, so we got everybody's money. We didn't care. Yeah. So from, if you were over 18, 19, over, and you wanted, if you were over 18 and you wanted to be a student, we'd take your money. If you're over 22, 23, we'd take your money. We didn't care. Yeah.
Do you think, I know you're not necessarily as active as you were, mm-hmm. when you were president. Do you think that situations like what you're talking about with you know, kids in school, mm-hmm. or other issues like that, where it's clear racism, mm-hmm. still plays a part,
right.
do you
yeah.
think that those problems are more difficult to deal with now, mm-hmm. than they were, say, in, you know, 1986?
Well, you know what, it probably are, because a lot of the educators, you know, like the principals and whatever, we always try to get in and get insights to them. But so it might be a little bit more difficult now because of just
calling the police.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that's what, and they've got these here, you know, policies in place, which is now policy, you know, it's such cut and dry things, you know, you do it, bam, you're gone, you know. So it was easy to go in and say, you know, don't try to put everybody in the same sheet of music, you know, these are individuals, you need to deal with yeah. them as individuals, but their thing was, you know, we have to take this non-nonsense approach and one size fit all. That didn't work sometimes.
Well, what sort of focus do you think? Do you think the focus of the NAACP has changed over time?
No, it's all, you know, their goal has always been the same thing: empowering the people who represent the people who don't have the voice, the voiceless.
Do they go at it a different way now, though?
Well, you know what, they have to, it because right now, you know, you got the technology and the YouTube generation.
Okay.
You can do things and you can in a totally different way. So you would have to change the way you do it. It's just that, you know, your mission remains the same. It's just that your means of achieving that mission has to be a little bit different. Yeah. And it's the same thing, you know, we tell parents, you know, like you said, you know, put a computer in the child's school, for your child. Don't go out and buy these sneakers and all this kind of stuff. They got cameras now in the classroom, you know, for people, you know, you can see stuff going on the buses and everything. So we got tapes now. So you got to go in now, you got to sit and you got to see all these things and evaluate them, engage them for yourself. As opposed to before, it's the student's word, they write a statement. Now it's video. Yeah. Yeah, but it makes it a lot different.
Have you seen the NAACP spread more towards all ethnic minorities?
Oh yeah, we've always always been that way. You know, it was the colored people, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. And, you know, like I said, we had people, white members come in, white members join. Well, people come in and they're white, they had problems. I had them call, you know, several, I would say, I wouldn't say several, but, you know, some calls of people, they would say, I'm a white person, would you? Sure, I don't care. If you're being mistreated and you're in the community, we still want to help you. You know, because we understand that, you know, when you've been mistreated, it doesn't matter who you are at that point in time. And, you know, and people like that. And then we have to understand that. See, the organization was founded with the assistance of white people.
Right.
So we keep that in mind as well.
Do you think there's an opposing view to what colored stands for in National Association of Advancement of Colored People, like whether it applies directly towards black people or all minorities, or even if it includes white people, like... Have you found opposing views in regards to that?
Well, you know, some people do, but we just tell them it's people of color, period. You know, people of color. Yeah. You know, so it's, you know, if you're a people of color, you've got a problem, you bring it in or whatever, and help us. You know, if you, it could be economics, anything, you know, just come in and we'll try to help you at that point in time.
Do you recall the Cobb County branch at all getting involved with Katrina aid or anything like that?
You know what? I'm sure DN did something. I'm not sure what it was, but I know they probably, you know, did something at that point in time. Mm-hmm. If it's nothing but always try to increase, you know, when the people did come here, have a job posting or job board for people could come by and look at jobs or opportunities that might, you know, get them some employment.
Have you heard of anything that currently the NAACP or even, you know, back in the 80s, you know, or, you know, Reaganomics, anything that you found has hindered the branch or the people within the branch based on, you know, economics?
Of course, you know, economics always does. You know, when people lose their jobs and they have limited disposable income, you know, membership in an organization is going to be go further down the totem pole. So, you know, I'm sure that, like, you know, maybe, you know, if you were supportive of the organization, but that's where you have to go and make up your dollars, like I said. That's what Dean has done by going to, even when the corporate dollars drop, because when we have our Freedom Fund banquet, we look for corporate dollars. Now you don't get as much, you know, with the corporate dollars. So you have to make new corporate partners. So the economics, it's gonna always hurt. It's gonna always hit. And the NWSP is not immune.
Going back to your younger years, did you ever experience racism in your life? Or?
Of course, you know, yeah, it has been.
You
yeah.
Born in 57, so what, you're like five when you're in your kindergarten?
Yeah, I was about five. I remember the day when coming home from school after President Kennedy had got shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I come home, my mom's crying, just weeping uncontrollably. I'm like, what's wrong? Since the president got shot, like, did you know him? Why are you crying so? But, you know, because of that friend. And like I said, I've...
Okay, anyways, you were saying when you came home and...
Right. You know, she was crying after that. But I was talking about, you know, the schools were not being integrated until we didn't go black. I went to an all-black school until I was in the 7th grade. Then I went to school in the 8th grade. We had integrated. And it was in the A group. It was myself, my friend Wayne Harris, who's a cardiologist now. And we were the only two kids in the black kids in that class. The rest of them were white. Because then you went to the B group, you know, that would be sort of, so, you know, you could tell, so that was some form of racism, because I was like, I knew this guy, he's smart, you know, why didn't I know he was here, you know? And, so, and I was even wondering, like, you know, how I wanted that, but, you know, it was something that made me aware that, you know what, I've been put in this situation, I've got to, you know, step it up, you know, and make good. And like I said, and Wayne's father, His father was the old principal of the school. He's the principal of the middle school then, because we were in middle school. So he had an abundant amount of resources. My parents didn't have that many resources.
Right.
But I felt like, well, if they can put me here and whatever, I can cut the mustard. You know, I can do it.
After integration, did the school that you had went to prior, the all-white school, did they close that school?
You know what? That became the elementary school.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And then we went to the middle school, and then they had that high school. But eventually, that school is now closed, and they built a brand new elementary school. Yeah.
Were the facilities comparable, do you recall? Or?
Probably not, because I haven't been into the new elementary school, but I'm sure, you know, it was probably a lot nicer than what we had. But, you know, when the old black elementary school. But, you know, it was there. Yeah. Just to see that separation of the students, you know, and I was like, you know, and then, you know, you don't get a chance to see the friends that you had before, you know, and so yeah, it was something else.
Was the school that you had went to, was it more like a community school where you knew everyone that went to the school? And
well, you know, in my grade, from like from first through the sixth, seventh grade, we just traveled, we were all together.
Right.
You know, you stayed with that group of people, you know. And then when we got there, as I said, in the eighth grade, bam, you know. And some of even my friends, you know, they were like, you know, wondering how, you know, well, you know, you it's reverse racism. What are you doing there with all those white people, whatever, right? You know, so you had to do that to deal with both ends of it, you know, because, and you know, you might get a chance to only see them at lunch. But, or even maybe at PE, and then you just have to make sure that the times were coordinated so you could see them. But you know, I didn't let that bother me too much.
Do you recall the assassination of Martin Luther King?
68. You remember that as well? Uh huh. Yeah. Another time, you know, when it was a dark time in the household. It was, you know, yeah. Remember that well.
So I guess you would have been in like seventh or eighth grade.
Yeah, about seventh or eighth grade at the time, you know, remember, you know, the teachers, you know, just, you know, that one, I realized, okay, Dr. King is died, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was a big thing for us. And that's why I was so honored that, you know, to be working for the Cobb County MLK support group and supporting that thing, that group, because here I am, you know, I'm doing something to advance the dream of Dr. King. Uh-huh. You know, I felt very good. I felt good when I fully rewarded by just working with the NAACP. I thought, what a great thing. And that's what the fraternity was doing as well, service. You know, we were all about service doing things. So I was just felt blessed and incredibly honored to be able to give back something back to the community.
Mm-hmm. Was there some sort of reaction? I mean, like, was it a mixed reaction?
When Dr. King was shot?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Now, at that time, in the black community, in the black schools, of course, it was all the same reaction, grief.
Yeah.
We weren't integrated at that point in time.
Yeah.
So it was complete grief, complete shock, you know, for that. And just watching the funerals on television, watching, you know, the Kennedys being assassinated, watching the funerals, you see that kind of stuff. It just, yeah, just grief.
One question I had wanted to ask you was, do you recall when Jesse Jackson asked you about a particular march?
Mm-hmm.
I think they marched from Newt Gingrich's political district to the Martin Luther King Memorial
mm-hmm.
site.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember him asking you if the Cobb County branch would participate in that march?
No, I don't think he did. But I remember going to Bob Barr's. I can't remember what I had gone there, but I had to go and talk to Bob Barr when he was congressman out here about a specific issue that he had done. I debated Sean Hannity on the radio before he became Sean Hannity, you know. I remember that, and that was probably back in when I was with the NAACP, we were talking. Mm-hmm. He invited me to come down and talk about some stuff, so I did. Took my son and my daughter down to the radio station with me, you know, they were young or whatever. But yeah.
Do you remember some of the questions that were asked? Or?
You know what? I really can't, because we were talking, you know, again, it was something that Bob Barr had supported in the 7th District, and we were just totally opposed to it.
Right.
And then, so I went and approached Bob Barr about it, and you know, of course, he was giving his spill on it. And then Sean Hannity heard that I had went out there, so he invited me to come out there and talk about it. But it was something, I can't remember the exact issue right now because it was so much. But I was thinking, you know, yeah, right down at Buckhead at the radio station. That's where he was. Sean might remember. I have to ask him.
You still talk to him?
Nah. Can't, he won't accept my calls now. Yeah.
Do you have anything else?
I'm done. I'm all out.
All right. This is going to conclude the tape recorded session. Anyways, all right. Bye.